WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A couple of scientists who made a big difference during the pandemic are getting notice on the world stage.
And the Nobel Prize for Medicine goes to
Kathleen Carrico and Drew Weissman
for breakthrough discoveries that paved the way for the mRNA vaccines against COVID-19.
Carrico and Weissman published their breakthrough discovery in 2005. 15 years before the COVID-19 pandemic.
Both reportedly overwhelmed at the news. Carrico said she was actually fired from a previous job 10 years ago. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
The other winner, Drew Weissman, is an immunologist at the University of Pennsylvania. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is responding to fellow Republican Matt Gaetz's campaign to strip him of his leadership position after he struck a deal to avert a government shutdown. McCarthy tells CBS's Face the Nation.
He wanted to push us into a shutdown, even threatening his own district with all the military people there who would not be paid, only because he wants to take this motion. So be it. Bring it on. Let's get over with it and let's start governing.
Gaetz says he'll pursue action this week to trigger a snap vote on removing McCarthy as speaker. Former President Trump says he will be there when his civil trial begins in New York today, accusing him of inflating his wealth and crossing the line into fraud. CBS's Graham Cates.
Still to be decided at trial are other issues related to falsification of business records, issuing false financial statements, insurance fraud, and conspiracy.
The case was brought by New York's Democratic Attorney General Letitia James. California Governor Gavin Newsom confirms he's named a replacement for Senator Dianne Feinstein, who died Friday at the age of 90. She is LaFonza Butler, president of Emily's List. CBS's Nicole Killian.
She previously served as a senior campaign advisor to Kamala Harris during her 2020 presidential campaign. Newsom had previously pledged to appoint a black woman to the post.
Say hello again to Stephen, Jimmy, and Jimmy. Episodes of the late night talk shows will be back tonight after resolution of the writer's strike. Members of the striking actors union will be back at the bargaining table today. Entertainment Tonight's Kevin Frazier.
You're getting dangerously close to the holiday season, all those movies that actors can't promote. You could wipe out all the TV shows for the winter if you continue this strike or if it goes on much longer.
Tonight's Powerball jackpot has topped $1 billion after no one won Saturday night. That makes it the fourth highest prize in the game's history. S&P futures are up 1, Dow futures down 8. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number 2 ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
He shouldn't even have BLTs. They're a terrible sandwich.
Oh, I love BLTs. That's
so like
the one deli sandwich I could have.
Greg, don't yuck my yum, dude. I will.
We've already established on this show today that Greg is happy to judge people's yums.
Bring me your yums, for I am the yum judge.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Under the helmet with the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Jordan Love was 15 for 27 for 245 yards and three TDs against a JV team.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't like Chicago, but I ain't going to call them a JV team. They suck, but it's a slap in the face. Okay. I'm laughing at y'all Bear fans.
I know, man.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger with Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday mornings at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Good morning. The time is 7:06 throughout Wisconsin. It is Up North News Radio. I am Chad Holmes, sitting in early this week for Pat Kreitel. Pat is off on vacation. On Friday of this past week, Todd Alba was the guest host. I will now be in the chair for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then Todd will be back on Thursday and Friday before Pat returns next Monday. So hopefully Pat, who is off in Idaho, I believe, enjoying his vacation, hopefully having a great time. And we'll hold down the fort until then, and very glad I could sit in. And again, I'm Chad Holmes. I'm on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230 out of Wausau. I host a daily show from 8 until 10 a.m. And when I'm done here with Up North News, you can flip on over on the Civic Media app or on the website, bullfallsradio.com. Join me from 8 until 10, as we do have shows throughout the state of Wisconsin as well. And then, of course, we have our statewide shows starting again at 10 o'clock with As Goes Wisconsin. And congratulations to Kristen Bry and her husband, Kristen, last week, Thursday, had a baby girl. Just an outstanding piece of news, Francis. And I know that Kristen was going to be heading home, I believe, on Saturday, and now on maternity leave. So Jane Mantonair will be the host of As Goes Wisconsin from 10 until noon. Then stick around for Town Call from noon until 1. Todd Alba from 1 until 3. Matt Lynn Direct from 3 till 4. Of course, the Devil's Advocates with Crudy and Dom from 4 until 6. And the Maggie Dawn Show from 6 until 7. Brand new studios here in Wausau. So, number one, first time to be able to guest host for Pat. And also here, this is we came in here for the first time in the morning on the show on Thursday. So we're still breaking in. Got a beautiful window. Our studio is right near Washington Street in downtown Wausau. Beautiful start weather-wise. We'll have a chance to get a complete look at the weather forecast around the state of Wisconsin with Jennifer Vucicki coming up in just a few minutes at 7:15. And then after that, we'll be joined by Kenneth Farmer, as I said, author, an outstanding book. Again, I had Ken on my program a couple of times, one talking about the book and another time talking about the issue of schizophrenia. But we're going to talk about the book because, again, I found it to be a great page-turner titled Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. So after the weather, we'll have Ken Farmer coming in, joined by my producer. And again, it feels like Christmas morning, a producer. And Sam Davison is joining us. And Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
How did the weekend go?
It was all right. Not too bad.
It was weird, as I said in the last segment, having either Packers or Badgers.
Well, yeah, that too. I don't know. I'm not that huge of a sports fan, but I was outside a decent bit, and it was just kind of crazy with how warm it was and seeing the leaves changing. It was nice, though. I'm not complaining.
Absolutely. And good for you. I think, again, I spend a lot of my time doing sports, especially the high school sports. So I still follow the colleges and the pros, and I'm very happy when our teams win. But I think there's a good good argument for balance, because it's so easy to get caught up and then sit in front of your television the entire weekend and not get out there and enjoy it, especially the kind of weekend that we have when the weather's still warm. It's not going to last. I mean, we're going to hit a wall here eventually, but to have that balance, to be able to take advantage when the weather is nice. And even today coming in, I mean, just a gorgeous morning early on, very early, I got to say.
Going to be thinking back to today when you're driving in the middle of winter in a snow-covered road.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I'll be able to turn around here and look out this window and see snow plows going by soon enough. But again, it's great to be with you, and it's great to sit in for Pat and really enjoying it, and hopefully be able to close to fill the shoes of the big man, right?
Yeah, you're doing pretty great so far.
Well, I appreciate that. Real quickly, today is October the 2nd, the first Monday of 2023, of October 2023, October the 2nd. A few celebrities are celebrating their birthdays today. One, we heard in our bumper last hour before our interview with congressional candidate Kyle Kilborn, we heard a message in a bottle from Sting. Well, and the Police, actually. The Police, and Sting, of course, was the writer of that song and the singer. And Sting is celebrating his birthday today. He is 72 years old. Morning show host Kelly Ripa turning 52 today. Also, Avery Brooks. He was the Captain Sisko on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He also was a co-star on Spencer for Hire. Avery Brooks turning 75 years old today. Some famous events. I'm a big history buff, and I love learning from history. And well, I think one of the more significant days in presidential history was today. On this date in 1919, 104 years ago, President Woodrow Wilson suffered a stroke that left him partially paralyzed. The thing was, he was able to successfully hide that from the American people for the most part for the next year and a half before he left office. Nowadays, never be able to do that, but his wife and his doctors were able to hide the fact that the president had a stroke back in 1919. That occurred on this date as he was going around the country making speeches, trying to get support for the League of Nations. And ultimately, the Senate did not approve United States participation in the League of Nations. Another famous event that occurred on this date in history was in 1950, the comic strip Peanuts by Charles Schulz first published. Yep, that was 73 years ago today. And for me, who's done many, many sports play-by-play broadcast, one of the greats all time, Vin Scully. It was on this date, hard to believe it's been 7 years, but 7 years ago today, Vin Scully broadcast his last Dodgers game after a record 67 seasons. And also on this date in 2017, a sad day in the entertainment world, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers leader, Tom Petty died of cardiac arrest at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles following an accidental overdose of painkillers for multiple ailments, including a broken hip. That occurred on this date in 2017. We're going to take a quick break, come back, have a weather update with Jennifer Vucicki, and then talk to Ken Farmer, author from Stevens Point. Coming up, it's Up North News. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Looking for more local programming?
Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley, 93.5 The Tap.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
I'm a great producer listening to what I say. As I said a few minutes ago, it was on this date in 1950 that the Peanuts comic strip made its debut on October the 2nd of 1950. I am Chad Holmes, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow here on Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, terrific to be on a lot of stations throughout Wisconsin, including here in Wausau, where I'm broadcasting from, Madison, Waukesha, Wisconsin Rapids, Amory, Racine, La Crosse, Eau Claire, and Hayward. All great to be talking to you. Glad you could join me here this morning. I'll be with you Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And of course, you can flip on over and tune into my show from 8 until 10 a.m. on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. I'm going to assume that our meteorologist, Jennifer Luchiski, is with us. Jennifer, are you out there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I get to talk to you on my show in a couple of hours, but now I'm subbing for Pat to get a chance to talk to you as well. Weather-wise, over the weekend, it was, at least here in central Wisconsin, we had a little bit of heavy rain early, had some beautiful weather as well. We had a smorgasbord, but temperature-wise, and just this morning, a beautiful start, at least here in Wausau. How's it looking around the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, it's actually going to be a pretty interesting forecast here this week. We saw a warm front push through here yesterday, and now high pressure is in control. Sunny skies across the board today with highs in the low to mid-80s, so pretty simple start to the work week here this week. A simple, similar forecast for Tuesday with this high pressure system, sunny skies and highs in the low to mid-80s once again. It does look like maybe a slight chance for some showers and storms starting to come in by Tuesday night for western Wisconsin, Amory and Baldwin down to Richland Center, ahead of a cold front that'll start to push through here by midweek Wednesday. Wednesday looks like at least a slight chance for showers and storms for all. Temperatures drop into the mid to upper 70s for most, a little cooler for western Wisconsin as that cold front starts out there, getting into the upper 60s. Then for the second half of the work week, continuing to cool as the system pushes through. A slight chance for showers and storms Thursday around Amory and Baldwin, and then also once again around Waukesha and Milwaukee. Otherwise, sunny skies for everyone in between. Low 70s for southern Wisconsin, mid to upper 60s from Richland Center up through Wausau, and still our coolest spots around Amory and Baldwin, getting down into the low 60s for afternoon highs. Then on Friday to round out the work week, it looks like at least a slight chance for some showers and storms across the board. Cooler mid to upper 50s from Richland Center and everyone south, and then low 50s from Oshkosh through central and west central Wisconsin.
Jennifer, thanks for the information. I will talk to you in a couple of hours on my program.
Sounds great. Thanks.
You bet. Again, Jennifer Vuchiski from Weatherology joining us here on Up North News on Civic Media. And very happy to welcome into our brand new studio, Kenneth Barmer, Stevens Point author. Had him on my program a couple of times talking about his book and talking about the issue of schizophrenia. And Kenneth is a author of Lee, the tragic story of a family broken by schizophrenia. And as I talked about in the first hour, and first of all, welcome back. Great to talk to you again, and welcome to our new studio.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
It certainly helps if I turn on your microphone. Okay. Yeah, I'm still getting used to all this good stuff. But hey, glad to have you on board. As I said, both to on the air the last hour, and when I talked to you previously, when we first set up this interview the weekend before, I got the copy of the book from you, and I have to admit, it's like, oh man, am I going to be able to get through this? Because it was, it's a few hundred pages. And it's like, sometimes it's like, sometimes a book works, sometimes it doesn't. And I told you, I said, once I started, I just kept reading and reading and reading. It was such a great read, number one, but also it is an incredible story. There are some points where it's a hard read. Other times there are, again, there's
stories that put a smile on the face as well, because, you know, you were able to fight through adversity and be able to, I think, make a very successful career and do a lot of good things. The first question I asked you the first time we met was that you had said that you had thought about doing this many, many times, thousands of times. To open yourself up in this way is not the easiest thing. What made you decide that you were ready to discuss personal family issues like this in a book?
Well, I met with an individual who was my boss when I was first out of law school at the public defender's office in Louisville, Kentucky. He had retired, and he actually is originally from Milwaukee, and we met in Milwaukee for lunch, and we discussed various things, cases in the past, and he mentioned he did a lot of mental health cases, and then I told him about my brother, and he told me that, or asked me, well, why did you mention this to me, because I did a lot of mental health work as a public defender, and I said I was just totally embarrassed by it. I guess I just didn't think it mattered. I could still do my job. And so he suggested, though, that I write a memoir about my brother. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want to do that because my mother was totally against the commitment process. This would be like burying family secrets. And so I was very reluctant to do so, and I was afraid it would make my family look bad. There was still a lot of shame and stigma that was operating with me years after it happened. And he convinced me that my family would actually come out okay from what I had told him about it. And so he convinced me to write the book, if for no other reason, to encourage other families to come forward and not be bridled by that stigma.
It truly is a family memoir. It's, you know, the title, Lee, is your brother. But this is a story of you, your brother, your mother, and your father. Let's talk about the three other main characters, I would say, in this book. And let's start off with your brother, because he's, you know, it's a complex person, because as you grew up, he was your hero. He was the one that was your leader. But at the same time, it didn't take very long to see there was something wrong. Could you talk about who Lee is, or who Lee was, starting as a boy at the start of this book?
Well, Lee, you know, he didn't really have schizophrenia early on. Most people don't that get it. Only like 2% get it in childhood. He had some issues. But he, like you said, he was basically my mentor. My father was sort of uninvolved in my life, except perhaps as a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't good. And my father had a huge problem with anger. And so my brother ended up being my de facto dad. He's the one that taught me how to bait a hook or to throw a football or to shoot a basketball. He encouraged me, to do all kinds of things I otherwise wouldn't have done. I think he even taught me to read. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, he got me to join Boy Scouts, and ultimately I became an Eagle Scout. He did all those things for me. So he was a very, very, very important figure in my life growing up. And it was very devastating for me to lose him to this disease. Because the effect of this was for the roles to change, to reverse entirely, where I was in charge of him, mm-hmm. rather than him being in charge of me. And so that was very difficult for me.
And your parents, you said it, your father is a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of undersells it.
Yeah.
He was a violent man.
Yeah.
Even on the drive to Wisconsin, when you move to Wisconsin, the idea in the back, anything going on, he's going to take a swing, basically.
Yeah.
And your mother had physical issues and emotional issues of her own. I mean, those were two parents that both had lots of, you call it, issues, correct?
Right. My mother was assaulted. And I didn't know this growing up by a boyfriend before she ever met my dad and before we were born. And as a result of that assault, she was hit in the head and she suffered a stroke, and she was paralyzed on the right side of her body, and she had to learn to do everything over with her left side. Hey, even to write, she was right-handed, and she had to learn to write with her left hand. And so she also had some psychological side effects of that. Very territorial, would do things like get in arguments with the neighbors as to whether they were setting foot on her property, perhaps on a weekly basis. And she'd be yelling and screaming. It was very embarrassing for us. And she would also get into arguments about whether her brother and sister were stealing things from the estate and of her parents. And it went on and on and on. And it was, we knew that she had problems, but what could we do? She was our mother. So, you know, there was some, a bad soup, I guess, you know, my father being so violent and angry prone, my mother having this quasi psychotic kind of episodes with the neighbors and her family. So, and then my brother ultimately had, I guess we had some genetics in our family, which supported schizophrenia. So all three of those elements went into my brother. Some reason I made it and he didn't.
Let's talk about the first decade. You know, when you moved to Stevens Point and were growing up with your brother and your family, and you said it, most times it doesn't occur until you're an adult, schizophrenia.
Right.
But you saw signs that there was something that wasn't quite right with your brother.
Yeah, it was quite odd. He was very withdrawn. He's very much intellectual. He's very smart. He would read a lot, but he didn't have very many friends. Hardly any friends came over to our house of his. And he'd mentioned some friends he had, but they were pretty distant. And at one point at 12 years old, I do recall this specifically about him. He told me that he was going to run away from home. And I said, "Where are you going to run away from home for?" Well, he said, "I'm going to go to Florida and hunt tropical fish and make $1 million at it." And I thought that was just like impossible for him to do, or, you know, how would he get there? How would he survive? He's 12 years old. What am I going to do without him? He was my mentor and everything. And he was just dead set on, and actually did leave and tried to take a bus to Florida. The reason that's significant is that throughout my brother's life, he engaged in these grandiose kind of schemes to make money. That was a theme of his. And grandiosity definitely can be a kind of delusional thing that some schizophrenics have. And he definitely had those things. And he definitely, and that was the very first one that I saw. And it scared me to death. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if to tell my parents. I didn't. And then eventually he was gone. And my dad said, "Where the hell is he? Blah, blah, blah." And blew up over it. And my brother came back, didn't make it, came back through the back door. And my father just said, "You know, do you realize that you had an orthodontist appointment you were going to miss?" You know, he was more concerned about, my father just didn't get it, you know, that this is a sign that somebody needs some serious counseling, you know. That wasn't what he was concerned about.
And as you continue, sign after sign, as the story continues, and we got about 30 seconds before a break, but to kind of lead into where we're going to go, is denial was a factor, not just there, but it continued even as he started to delve deeper into the issues.
Yes, he definitely, denial was a big thing by my family. I don't think they wanted to acknowledge it. Even when he started hearing voices and talking to himself at the dinner table, even, they ignored that and did nothing about it. I think part of it is that it was ignorance of the disease, but some of it.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. Two scientists, one American from UPenn, the other Hungarian, have won this year's Nobel Prize in Medicine.
For their discoveries concerning nucleoside base modifications that enable the development of effective mRNA vaccines against COVID-19.
Nobel Committee member Thomas Perlman. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's challenging fellow Republican Matt Gaetz to bring it on amid the Florida congressman's threat to strip him of his leadership position. McCarthy telling CBS's Face the Nation.
If he's upset because he tried to push us in a shutdown and I made sure government didn't shut down, then let's have that fight.
Striking members of the Actors Union returned to the bargaining table today. Entertainment Tonight's Kevin Frazier.
The hope is that they will sit down and negotiate a new contract that will work not only on AI, but also streaming.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Time out!
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's up north on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in today for Pat Kreitlow. Pat is on vacation. We are talking to author Kenneth Farmer. He's from Stevens Point, and he has a new book out titled Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. We talked again about some of the denial, some of the early signs real quickly as well. I think something about this book that I think connects with people around here is you make Central Wisconsin part of the story, that when you moved up here, you talk about what it was like growing up, you know, in the midst of the 60s and the Packers and your heroes. And you know, you mentioned some places in Stevens Point that, you know, either went to school or part of the area, that Stevens Point is part of this story as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mainly grew up in Stevens Point. We lived in Kentucky for a while till I was about seven, and we came up here. And I went through the school system. I graduated from Spash. My brother went through the school system here. My brother ultimately ended up dying in a group home in Wausau, died in Wausau Hospital. When it was Wausau Hospital, I think it's Aspirus now.
Right.
He was in a group home on Washington Street, I think.
This is Washington, right outside our window.
Yeah, exactly. That's where he was. And actually, he functioned the best when he was in that group home.
That's something I want to talk about as we get towards the end of the story. But we kind of started where you saw some issues early on. At what point did it start to get violent, or did you know that it was getting violent? Because I know that there were times where when you went away to school, you didn't realize that there was some violence from your brother towards your mother that we'll discuss as well. But where did it go from maybe eccentric, as you said, with these ideas of trying to, you know, make $1 million in Florida, to it got serious in terms of the violence?
He started having serious paranoid type problems with my mother. He thought that she was out to get him. And I remember the first episode, he started screaming at her out of the blue about something and then tried to light something on fire. I think it was an application to college. It was when he was 17, and tried to light some of the cupboards up in the kitchen. And we called the police and nothing happened. And then it really got violent, and I lucky I was there, because I don't know what he would have done to her to keep him off of her. And then at the dinner table in the middle of that summer, he, out of the blue, he called my mother something like a bitch or something. And my father, of course, exploded. And then I had to keep them apart. And he started screaming, "She's the one. She's the one. You know, put her in a mental hospital. She needs to be in a mental hospital." You know, and maybe so, you know, she did have some mental health issues, but he was completely out of control. And I got into a physical altercation where I, myself, my father, were, you know, all in, myself and my brother were all in one threesome. Mm-hmm. Tang, you know, going down the stairs, falling down the stairs. My brother's trying to hit my father. My father's trying to hit him. It was just awful. And, you know, then it was sort of one incident after another like that. Sometimes he would try to choke my mother when I wasn't there. My father would intercede. And it just kept going on that way, and it got worse and worse. And there came a point where He came home one evening and said, "We needed to get out of the house." It was the middle of the night. And he had by then beaten my mother and father up so many times, I can't even count. And he said, "We had to get out of there." And he started crying and screaming that an organization called the Black Mafia was out to kill him and kill our family, and that they were coming. And then we really knew that he had really slipped over. This wasn't youthful rebellion or any of this. This was seriously a serious mental illness. And I got him out of the house, and he came back in the house. And he was wielding a tennis racket he found in the garage at my mother. And I was able to get the tennis racket away from him and basically drag him out of the house. And I was able to get that done, and we slept in a hotel that night. And that's when we did our first commitment petition.
Denial, 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 because, again, right. You know, we get to that point where you decide that it's commitment. And you mentioned that you lost count of the physical altercations. And still, right. You got to the point, and it was you that was probably the leader in terms of saying, needs to be committed. And yet, despite the physical beatings that your mother took, she, for her entire life, refused to sign or be part of any commitment exercises. Was it you that ultimately decided that Lee needed to be committed?
Yes.
You talk about how difficult that was, because it was not easy, was it?
I knew I would lose my brother. I would not only lose my brother, I would lose my mother. That was extremely hard for me. But I just got to the point where, you know, I had to do something. I couldn't be there all the time to stop things.
Real quickly, how old were you at this time?
19. And I was a sophomore in college at UWSP. And so I met with, under the encouragement of a professor of mine, I met with my family. And my mother refused to sign the petition. Said, over my dead body, I'm not doing that. And so we had to have three petitioners to get a commitment proceeding started. And we only had myself and my father. And so we had one of my father's colleagues sign a petition because my mother refused to do it. I don't know if it was out of guilt, or I think more of it was shame by her, and shame and blame kind of go together. And she was blaming herself perhaps for this, and she just wouldn't do it. And so that was our first commitment proceeding, and it ended up in an agreement, which should never have happened. We agreed to 10 days for him in a mental hospital in Madison, and the doctor down there had us meet as a family, and my brother lost it in the hospital, and they took him away. The psychiatrist said, look, this 10-day agreement is crazy. It's going to take longer than this to get him on medication. He's not going to be supervised once he gets out, because you gave up the opportunity for a commitment when you had the chance. You know, he had to, and this would never have happened today. They would have gone ahead with the commitment under those circumstances. And so then he gets out, and naturally what happens is he decompensates eventually over a number of months, and he goes to a rooming house in Stevens Point, right across the street from Boston Funeral Home there. Mm-hmm. And I went to visit him one day, and the door was partially open. He wasn't there, and I could see through the partially open door a shotgun. My brother, who never hunted in his life, never had any interest in firearms in his life, now had purchased a shotgun from a store called The Sports Shop in downtown Stevens Point. And I got the shells. I didn't want to carry a shotgun down the street, but I got the shells.
Right.
And, you know, there was a note on the floor, or some writings of my brother, and it said, the writings in his handwriting said, I live in the death house, conveniently located across the street from the funeral parlor. You know, and really what I was seeing at that point was, we see it all the time now, of mass shootings and things like that. That was the beginning of something like that with him. And so I knew I had to do something. I got the shells, got out of there. I took the piece of paper with me and the receipt for the gun that was on the floor too. Told my dad, and we initiated the second time, another petition. And this time we finally got him committed, but it wasn't without a struggle, because the law required, and it still requires to this day, that you have a recent overt act or threat of violence. If you're going the direction of harmful or a threat to others, which we were, you had to have a recent one. And they said that that wasn't the case, because my brother never threatened anybody with the gun. He never pointed it at the gun. Yet it was very obvious that he was extremely dangerous, and it was like they weren't going to be able to do anything. So the night before the jury trial, the social worker called me on the phone. And she says, guess what? I said, what? She says, you don't have to worry about the overt act. Your brother assaulted a nurse at Norwood up in Marshfield. That nurse quit her job because of my brother. And she testified at the jury trial. It was an awful, awful situation. They keep you in a jury trial if you haven't testified yet, away from other witnesses. And we were in this conference room. She was in there with her husband, and I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if to apologize for my brother or what. It was awful.
We're talking to Ken Farmer, again, the author of Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia, Stevens Point author. Glad to have him here on Civic Media. That kind of brings up a point about the dynamic within the family, about your role, because you're being put in a situation here where you're almost the head of the household in a sense. Yeah. And that's part of it. And also part of the story is where there's a point where you actually get frustrated because you're doing all the, and it's something we haven't really got into yet, but you did all the right things in terms of being able to be successful in the classroom, be able to go to law school. And at a certain point, you got frustrated that everything is being focused on Lee, while you, the good son, feels like you're not getting, I guess, the proper love. But talk a little about the role within your family, both in terms of where ultimately you're making these incredibly life-changing decisions for your family, and then at the same time, you feel like, hey, I'm not being appreciated within my family unit.
That is a definite dynamic that occurs in many families involving schizophrenia. I was reading a book about that, the dynamics of this, and I was shocked at all the things that happened in our family.
You're talking about you, right?
They were talking about me. And one of them is exactly what you've said, that siblings become angry because the resources, both in terms of money and in terms of, you know, emotional attention or whatever, being directed towards the person who's schizophrenic. And the other dynamic of that, so there's anger. That's a common thing among siblings. Another thing is the sibling who isn't schizophrenic tends to try to overachieve,
right,
to compensate for the schizophrenic child. Because they don't want their parents to feel like they're failures, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but there's that's sort of a family hero syndrome. Mm-hmm. It occurs in families of alcoholics. It occurs in any dysfunctional family. And so, but, you know, there's a good and a bad side to that. By trying to be family hero, perhaps I achieved in ways that I wouldn't have otherwise. I went mm-hmm. to law school. Got in the law review, had good grades in law school, and really worked hard. And so that was a good thing,
mm-hmm.
a good thing, you know, that perhaps I never would have done otherwise because of that family dynamics. But there are many other things like that that occur in families of schizophrenics.
Kind of quickly, we got about a minute, a little more than a minute to go in this segment, and then we'll come back with one sure. more segment. But something that I thought a real touching story is after you had a blow up with your parents about that issue about, you know, again, I'm doing everything great, and you found souvenirs that your mother had kept from the Scouts, and you again thought about how she, who needed to basically, she had no use of one of her arms, how she was able to put together the badges.
Yeah. My mother had she could sew with one arm.
Mm-hmm.
She used her mouth to help thread the needle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She sewed on every one of my 22 merit badges for my Eagle Scout. And it would take her, you know, an hour or two to sew on one merit badge because she had to do it with one hand. She sewed on all of my badges. They didn't have these stick-on kind of badges like mm-hmm. they do now where you put an iron on it. No, they had to be sewn on. And she did all that for me. And she, with one hand, clipped out every time I was in the paper for something, whether it was speech or debate or National Honor Society, whatever, she would clip out every one of those with one hand.
We'll come back after a break, more with Ken Farmer, author of Lee, and we'll talk about, again, a very interesting book. And you're up north. I'm Chad Holmes in for Pat Kreitlow of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been wasn't this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
If I could be you,
and you could be me, for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
It is going to be sunny and warm again today. 84 our high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight down to 63. Tomorrow partly cloudy, becoming breezy. 81 with scattered thunderstorms tomorrow night into Wednesday. After that, it's going to be cooler. Wednesday's high 71. We're talking highs in the low 50s by Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
It's Up for the News with Pat Krylo at Away This Week. I'm Chad Holmes, and I work at Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. I have a daily show from 8 until 10 a.m., so once we're done here in this final segment, if you want to flip on over, if you're listening on other stations around the state, BullFallsRadio.com, also the Civic Media app by going to the Bull Falls Radio page. Hope you can join me from 8 until 10 a.m. or just keep it on your station. I'm sure it'll be outstanding programming as well. We're talking to author Ken Farmer, Stevens Point, author of a new book, Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. And one word that came into my mind when I was reading the book was denial. Another word is shame, because during the course of your life, you had significant events that occurred, graduations from law school and college and high school. And also when you would see somebody you would not want to introduce to your family, the word shame, that you didn't have your family involved in some of these parts of your life. And that's something that's also very common in this situation, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly shame is. And yeah, that was a problem for me. I don't think I did well in terms of relationships with the opposite sex that much. I never really wanted to get married or have children because I didn't know if they turned out to be schizophrenic. I didn't want to tell them about my family. And so that hurt my relationships with them, because If you're serious about somebody, generally speaking, you introduce them to your family. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that, and I would lose relationships because of that. There were a lot of problems like that for me. I actually went into therapy over it, and you know, the therapist said, "Well, you're just camping out all the time." That's how he put it, and it was so true of me. And so it made it very difficult for me to formulate serious intimate relationships, because I didn't want to have another replay of what happened. So there were some things like that. I think also he didn't come to, and maybe that's my fault, I still feel guilty, but to any of my graduations. He never came to my Eagle Scout ceremony. He was gone. Sometimes it was because he wasn't around. We didn't know where he was. And, but it was in my mind just as well. I don't know how I could have dealt with him at the same time. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, he didn't even come to my own wedding when I finally did get married.
There's so much within this book that we don't have time to go into, because we basically talked about, I think, the early part of the life up until you were able to get him committed. But there was a lot of life after that, a lot of years after that.
Yeah.
How would you say that
after you got to that point where you and your father ultimately were finally able to commit him over the years, was there ever, you know, in terms of, you know, medication, in terms of being able to live a life for your brother, how would you describe those years as an adult? Because as you mentioned, he ended up here in Wausau at a group home where he died. What were the years as an adult like?
Well, eventually my brother wasn't as violent or as delusional with time. What happens with schizophrenia, the typical course of it is in the initial stages, there are outward symptoms such as delusions and hallucinations. He got on some medication, on and off on medication, but he mellowed out some, but he still had what are called negative symptoms rather than outward symptoms, internal ones, where he couldn't interact with other people at all. Mm-hmm. He couldn't take care of himself. Lack of self-care is a big thing in schizophrenia. So he had to constantly be monitored. And he really, he got better to the extent that he wasn't violent or as delusional. He was still at times. But he didn't have those kinds of serious symptoms, but he still had the other symptoms. He still needed to be taken care of. And as a result of that, I don't believe he ever got better completely at all. And that's not the case with all schizophrenics, but to a certain extent with him, his disease could only be managed. It couldn't be cured.
Mm-hmm. What about the relationship with your parents as the years went on? Because as I said, I think the first time that we talked at the start of the book, your father was not the hero. He was the villain of the story.
Right.
I mean, because of his violence.
Right.
And they would say that for your mother with her issues as well, was difficult. I thought as the story went on that that your father looked better and better because of obviously the stories you were able to find out about what happened to your mother before they'd even met. How would you describe the relationship between you and your parents as the years went on?
Well, as you mentioned with my father, he and I had something in common now more, and he and I worked together. We were a team that tried to deal with my brother because my mother didn't want to deal with it. And so that was a good thing. Obviously, as I got older, too, I think he and I had more in common intellectually because he was a professor at UWSP. And, you know, when I was going to college, you know, I could talk about Plato and Aristotle and stuff like that. And he could, too. Mm. And so we had more in common. As far as my mother, I don't think it really changed a lot. I do know that when I didn't spend a whole lot of time at home when I would come home, I would spend time at other people's houses, friends of me. Whenever I'd come home from law school or even after law school when I was a lawyer, I never went home for very long. And when my brother would be there, we'd have a meal, and then my brother would just stand up and say, I want to go back now to wherever he was living, and then I would take him back. Mm-hmm. And then I would leave. I did not want to be around there. It still bothered me.
I mean, even when you went to school at UWSB, you didn't live at home.
No.
I mean, that was probably a big sign as well. We only got about 90 seconds to go. I guess number one, I said just a few minutes ago, there's so much more. Get the book as well, just to read the stripper story. The first time we had you on, I brought that up, and I thought it was such an it makes it for an enjoyable read. Again, so when you find out, just read the stripper story again to add to all that as well. Number one, again, how can people get the book? I mean, if I encourage them to do so. How do they get the book?
Well, my website is kenfarmerwrites.com. Writes, WRITES. You can purchase it through me, or you can purchase it through any of 15, 16 bookstores throughout the state that are listed on that website.
Okay.
And all you do is click on the right stuff. You can follow the website. It's really easy to follow. And, you know, there are some all over the state that sell the book. And I'd be happy also to get them a copy of the book.
Terrific. Again, I encourage you to go to Ken Farmer Writes.com. get information on getting that book. Ken, it's always a pleasure to have you on board. Thank you for coming on and joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Chad Holmes, again, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow. I'll be back tomorrow from 6 until 8. Stick around. More to come on Civic Media.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.